Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome to Extraction Giants. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber, head to, so we're a couple minutes late. Our big surge protector box in the blue, and we had to reroute the power. And there's no doubt in my mind this is Thomas's fault. How can it not be? He was here and it blew.
I'm not going to say this was directly his fault, but I will say whenever I come in after a day he's here, there is something always wrong. So it's almost as if he brings a black cloud to the studio.
Yes, could very well be. Kevin, how are you, buddy?
So he's sort of like Pigpen in the Peanuts comics, where he's just got this little cloud of dust following him everywhere he goes. Huh?
Exactly right. Yeah, like this. There's no way he contributed to this. This was just, I don't know, bad luck or bound to happen. But this always happens.
He's a jinx. That's a tough way to live your life.
Yeah, it always happens the day after he's here, or the morning when the next person comes in. It's like all hell broke loose every time.
Well, S&P futures up 2850, NASDAQ futures up 98, Dow futures up 249. Is all of a sudden we're gonna cut a trade deal. Trump likes cheaters. A great chance to make a deal, and we're gonna be a winner. And oh, by the way, what are we gonna buy Greenland now or something? Some story with that. I didn't have a chance to go through that one. So
I think we should do a purchase and lease back to him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? It actually makes sense. For the rubes to think that the climate isn't getting warmer, because if it gets warm enough to where there is no ice cap on Greenland, it probably will be fairly valuable property. Now, what the rest of the world will look like at that time, it might be the only land that's above the ocean. Just saying.
Yeah, I don't think so.
There's going to be a few places that are in trouble. We might need the property.
There may very well be, but there's. I'm not going to argue out climate change with you guys, because here's something. What was it a week or two ago? You guys were talking about the thing that you believe that conventional wisdom probably doesn't. The interview question, and. That was when our guy from Luckbox said, he was looking at Google and Facebook and, you know, other social media as an existential threat. If you were to ask me what my belief is that doesn't seem to jibe well with what's really happening is, I think there's enough common ground to formulate all kinds of policies that are very contentious today. I think there's enough common ground amongst most people. It's just that the politicians are playing competitive sport instead of trying to solve problems. And media is on board with that on both ends of the spectrum. And one of them is that whatever you think of climate change, the models, all of that kind of stuff, I don't think there is anybody that doesn't support having a cleaner planet. That's one of those areas where I think we have a basis for common ground and crafting policy around the things we do. So we might disagree on some of the particulars, but if you start with a foundation of what does everybody support, and I think everybody, almost everybody, supports strong environmental policies.
I think Kevin's exactly right. And when you every once in a while, Kevin, you bring this up, that if you actually start with the common ground and then kind of branch out and see how far you can go, you can probably get a lot of things done. But for whatever reason, our politicians never, ever, ever do that. And I don't know if that's a new thing or if it's always been like that, but it seems like in my adult life, it's always been like that.
Been that way a long time, that's for sure. Yes, Tom?
I'm going to push back a hair in the sense that, and this, of course, comes with the compromise part, is the people that are creating some of the problem, if there is a problem, are always going to want to put the line in the sand just outside their gate. I'm sure the people...
Well, maybe, but when you're talking, you know, I'm not talking about compromise. Common ground and compromise are different things. Compromise is I give up something because you give up something. Although in the political world, compromise is you just do what I want. What I'm saying is you find the common ground and you operate in there. And it would be nice to have some leaders who would do that. Look, consensus goes like this. Consensus isn't 50% plus one. Consensus isn't most people. Consensus is where you bring, you have people who say, I support that, and along with them you have people who say, yeah, I can live with that, that's okay. And I think there's plenty of consensus.
Among us, you and me,
among
and Maddie.
People, among human beings who live in this country.
I'm going to say that the guy in China who's having the cashmere goats run the thing down to the hole so he can sell cashmere for a tenth of what it used to cost and is making deserts out of China, or people with dirty factories in Mexico would disagree with you. Yeah, it's fine. Just leave me alone or grandfather me in or something.
We don't have legislative control of them.
Okay, I understand that, but...
We do have some policy control over things like that, though. So, if we kind of get the domestic act in order, then we can start saying, okay, how does policy apply to how we will do business internationally?
I'm not disagreeing, what I'm saying is...
Before we start saying, well, we don't... Yeah, in my world, I'd say, yeah, I don't buy product from people like that. But before we start baking that into trade policy, let's just start figuring out what we can do under our own control.
I'm coming at this from somewhat of a different angle. When you look at most things that are done in the human world, starting with you and I doing term papers in high school and college, most human beings, unless you're some kind of weirdo, or some girl who wanted to get all A's all the time, never did it before the night before, right? But it's sort of the way every bill comes down to the night before, it seems like. You know, the Congress is leaving and 11:59, they stop the clock for an hour. I mean, this is sort of human nature.
Deadlines are fine, yes.
I just get the feeling, I mean, when you look at the Roosevelt New Deal stuff, I'm going to go back and look at my books, but I'm going to say that every, out of the three or four New Deal things that are left, most if not all were signed in the summer where somehow Roosevelt got the Congress to come back before they had air conditioning and it was the hottest summer up until now. Well, I guess it was pretty warm there in the Dust Bowl era. Then people signed the stuff just to get the hell out of town. I'm not so sure that if you look at some of the intricacies of climates, where some places up north are warm and some people warmer than they should be, with the massive amounts of people living there and those kinds of things, I think if you wait till a crisis stage and the part that we can control on global warming, which is not all us, I understand that for sure. I mean, if a volcano pops up, it's more than 90 bazillion cars for whatever, I mean, right? If we wait till the last minute on this, I'm not so sure there's coming back, is what I'm saying. It's sort of not in human nature to be ahead of the game anywhere, at any time.
Okay, so you find your common ground and you don't wait for anything. You legislate in the common ground. You make your incremental improvements.
I just saw, get a little of this.
This is how, in the business world, and I think this applies in the world in general, is you get great by being in a mode of continuous improvement. You don't get great by saying, well, I'm looking for that one big kill. You know, it's sort of like your financial plan is Is your financial plan to sock away $20, $30 every paycheck or something like that over the course of your life, or is your financial plan to hit the lottery?
See, Kevin,
if you're trying to hit the lottery, well, good luck with that. You might, you know, and if you do, good for you. But that's not a plan. The financial plan is to sock away a little bit every week. Well, it's sort of the same thing with with any issue. Is you have to make the incremental improvement.
Well, we have had, since this country showed up, I don't know if the Indians did it too. They might have. People who abused the environment, skirted the laws, or on the leading edge of the laws, have made fortunes, Kevin. And I don't know if that's ever going to stop.
I get that, Tom. But nowadays, most people don't. Most people are very conscious of what they do. Hell, they reverse engineer all of their processes. Because not only because is it nice to you to reuse, is it the right thing to do to reuse as much as you can? It's also economical.
Right. Don't disagree. See, you're catching me on a bad day. Now you're going to ask why, or do I have to go ahead with this?
Well, I know why. Yeah. You watched the Cubs game last night.
Worse than that, I did something I swore I would never do yesterday.
Oh, you looked at the dead clock.
No. Oh, no, no. That I do too often.
No, nothing so drastic.
Okay,
what'd you swear you were never going to do?
I swore I would never be one of the citizens that did something really ignorant and call the alderman's office and bitch them out.
Oh, well, that's gonna kill you.
But I had to yesterday. It's a new
law. Get rid of the alderman?
Oh, no. God, no. Even though she just had this huge fight for the office and barely won, so of course she's going to love everybody. Well, she's right back to being the useless alderman. I don't know that you know or anybody cares, but I'll just tell a story anyway. There was some modus operandi, some thought to the design of Chicago streets and alleys, right? In the sense that the alley, if you look at it, even though it just looks like kind of crummy old concrete, it actually was designed to where it sloped into the middle. And water that got caught out there or came out of people's garages or whatever would then run one way toward essentially the street where the sewers all were. Okay? And then somewhere along the line, years ago, they decided, probably rightly, that people can't have drains in their garage. Because, of course, you had idiots that would, drain their radiator in there.
Sure. And put ethylene. Change the oil and pour it down there.
Well, but ethylene glycol is probably worse for the waterways than oil. Oil's just dirty, but ethylene glycol is like, it was like the worst thing for the sanitary district
ever.
Lasts
forever.
There's no dilution to it, evidently. Though you can't get rid of it. I mean, it becomes like poisonous, whatever. So I come home the other day and I'm going, why do these people just drop a bunch of asphalt in the alley? Now granted, the streets are horrendous. The potholes are still there from the spring. They get somebody to come put like 2 inches of blacktop in the alley. And now there's a crown like in the alley, and it's higher than everybody's garage.
Beautiful. So you can't have a drain in your garage, but you can accumulate water from the alley.
Right. So
nicely
I called. I'm sitting there going, this is stunning. Not only how much did it cost, who got this contract, and why, if they're so busy on doing it, why not do a street instead of an alley that didn't have any potholes, didn't have anything? I mean, it was an alley. I called up. I said, are you guys taking stupid pills? And the guy goes, what do you mean? I said, first of all, I didn't even know anybody did it. And I said, you're now hired in everybody's garage. What's this going to look like in the wintertime? Plus, now they don't want the gutters going into the ground, so everybody's gutter shoots out to the alley. Now it's just going to back right up in everybody's yard. I'm like, Kevin, where do we find these people?
How much you want to bet that somebody with some clout just needed a better basketball court in the alley?
Those are illegal. You can't have basketball court in the alley.
Even though everyone does.
Even though everybody does, but I mean, they're illegal.
The kids right next door to the building we're in play basketball all the time in the summer in the alley.
Anyway, Kevin.
And I don't blame them.
I don't either. You do have to wonder where you're, they can always find money for the stuff they want to do, and they can never find money for stuff anybody else wants them to do. It is, no matter how contentious the elections, it seems like, we replaced how many aldermen this time? Medium replaced the mayor. Looks to me, it's 8 weeks later, it's business as usual. I don't see anything changing at all. I mean, maybe something is somewhere, but is the co-opting process, I mean, were you surprised when Carl was talking about his buddy that won the thing in Florida? You go to the orientation and you can't have an outside person do your electronics and you can't have your own phone and if you don't play ball, you don't get a committee assignment, that there's this massive pecking
order. Well, and let's take that a little bit farther, because you've been talking a lot lately about the man behind the curtain. And there's a video in the news of an interview with Jack Brewer, and Jack Brewer is a former NFL player. And it's in the news for the reason that he says he's the one who asked the president to call out Elijah Cummings a few weeks ago. He said he had met with the president, and he said you know he had just been to Baltimore, and you got to call this guy out. And I think that's newsy, because it's people saying, here, an African American man asked him to do that, and then Trump got blasted for being a racist for doing it. But to me, the news in the interview with him, and I can tweet out that interview if anybody's interested. But the news in there is that he talks about a couple of things. One, he says is, there's nobody teaching the kids in those areas, that they don't really have a culture, and there's nobody teaching them. But he goes on to say the reason the politicians don't do that is that they pay no attention to their constituency. What they're paying attention to what raises them money. What gets your PAC money? And that's these big issues that don't relate to your neighborhoods and don't relate to your constituencies. They're the big issues, like what's your gun policy, what's your climate policy, what's all of those kinds of things, because that's where the money is. That's where the money feeds the campaign fund. That's the one that feeds your PAC, and that's their long-term lifeblood. And so, the point being, and I think that's really a solid point, is that, we don't live to serve anymore. We live to go where the money, to go where the money is. And I don't know what the solution is, because it's really, really hard to limit where the money goes in politics, both from a practical standpoint and from a constitutional standpoint. But at the same time, it is really discouraging us from dealing with the issues that we have right at the root level.
I think if I wanted to, Kevin, even though you've been very articulate, I could get a lot more guttural and talk about some of the wards in Chicago and how when the aldermen went from white to black, or European-American versus African-American, whatever the hell you want to call it.
That's right. Demand to start being called a European-American.
Yeah, you're not white anymore. You are absolutely correct. When the amount of money that are in transient hotels on the old Madison Street, the amount of money in the drug industry that are feeding these aldermen and feeding these committeemen, I mean, you're right. That's where the money is. If it was downtown law firms, they'll take the money from the downtown law firm. If it's a transient hotel, they'll take the money from the transient hotel to leave 300 people in there when there should be 150. Whatever the code would be. I mean, it's
right, but there aren't single moms with three kids and trying to keep them out of gangs and get them to school every day and all that. But they're not contributing to the PAC.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't gotten any better. Matter of fact, it's worse, because
so we pay lip service to them at election time and then do nothing for them because we go back to chasing the money.
SP Futures up 27.
We'll talk about how that relates to Carl's guy.
Up 86. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill as well. By the way, when you hear people keep talking about how much we're still up on the year and blah, 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 those numbers aren't correct. But if you look and see where we are from a year ago, with all this craziness that's going on and all this stuff going on up and down in the market, we are probably 4 points lower than last year at this time in the SPY. So we haven't really gone much in the last year.
Flat.
That would be, yes. S&P futures up 25. NASDAQ futures, this is after the move up this morning. NASDAQ futures up 82. Dow futures up 230. Over in Europe, we've got, again, the president came out and said, we're going to have a deal with China. What's this, about the 100th time? We're going to have this steadying influence.
We've been going up for 10 straight years. This is how it usually goes, right?
We've had a few dips here and there, but yeah, we have been pretty much. DAX up 108.1%. Those guys were down yesterday. Everybody's recovering here today, pretty much across the board. FTSE up 46.6%. CAC around up 56. That's a full percent. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei up 13. Now, these guys were up yesterday. Shanghai up 8. Hang Seng up 238. So not much going on there except for Hang Seng is almost a percent. Bonds, the 10-year, 1.54. The Bund, Get a little of this. It continues to go more into the negative. Negative 0.7. Again, we've commented on that enough. Oil up 40 cents, 50.47. Brent up 52, 58.75. Gold down 750, 15.23. Silver down 3 cents, 17.17. So they're still hanging up there pretty high. But still, third weekly rise in a row. You know, it's down a little bit today. Matty, what do you got for us, Travis Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. The Sports Weather Traffic Update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The Guide to Money and Probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription. Just go to luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Keep in mind, the Air and Water Show is this weekend, so expect higher traffic volumes than usual from the suburbs heading into downtown to get their spot on the beach for that. But we're off to a good start today. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson looking good. Southside expressways behaving as well as they typically do on Friday mornings. Only real issue in the area, it looks like, is downtown. Franklin in the Loop at Jackson. There is a crash causing a bit of a slowdown. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine early. Then we could have some isolated showers that roll through on and off throughout the day. A high of 79 degrees. Right now it's mostly clear and 66 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, another hot one today. Sunshine with a high of 111. Right now it's clear and 85. In sports, you could argue it was the worst loss of the season yesterday for the Cubs. They were dominating the Phillies throughout the entire night. Five-run lead. Yu Darvish was basically unhittable. And then the bullpen gave up seven runs in the final two innings to lose that one 7-5. Didn't get much help from the defense either. A big error by David Bodie. A couple of hard-hit balls off the glove of Ian Happ. And there you go. Cubs lose 7-5. They're swept in Philadelphia. They'll limp into Pittsburgh for a three-game series this weekend in a virtual tie with St. Louis atop the NL Central. But the Cardinals have won 5 out of 6, and the Cubs have lost 5 out of 7. White Sox lost in L.A. last night to the Angels 8-7. Diamondbacks were blown out by the Giants 7-0, so not a good day for any of our baseball teams. Preseason football game number 2 tonight. Bears are at the Giants to take on New York. That's a 6:30 Chicago time kickoff. The only interesting news from that is rookie wide receiver Riley Ridley is expected to play and make his debut. He didn't play in game 1 due to some injuries, but I think he's going to be a decent player, so I'm looking forward to watching him. Chief.
Do you think that you'd rather be pitching with Russell and Baez as your middle infield, or Bodie and the other guy?
Bodie and Happ?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you might have been dozed by then, Chief. Kevin, did you watch the ninth?
I did not, thank God.
No, I saw it much to my horror, on Quick Pitch this morning.
I mean, I'm not going to say, so, you know, they get a soft fly ball to left field to you know, start off the ninth, one out, you're up 5-0. Or at that point, I think it was 5-2, or it was 5-1. Then a routine ground ball to shortstop, and Bodie boots it. It's like, okay, you know, could be nothing, but that's usually how big innings start, is some kind of play like that. So instead of two outs, nobody on, now there's a guy on base. Well, then they go to Strope. He gets two ground balls to the second baseman. Now, granted, they're not routine plays, but they're plays that if Baez is playing second, which he doesn't anymore, but if he was last year, he makes both of them. I mean, no question in my mind. If Russell's playing second, I think he makes both of them. But it's Ian Happ, and he gets a glove on both of them, kind of lunging to his right, and they both trickle into the outfield for hits. So it's like a booted ground ball to shortstop and then two plays with zero range at second base. And now all of a sudden, it's a big deal. Strope is shaken up. He hits the next batter. So then they take him out, and then Harper hits the grand slam. That's probably still going right now. He hit that ball so far.
Yeah, went by the space station. Boy, that pitch was right down Broadway, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they brought in Holland specifically to face the lefty because he's been good against lefties, and that ball was just murdered.
Yeah. Did what's the guy's name they acquired from Texas?
Fielder or pitcher?
Little fast guy.
Oh, Tony Kemp?
From the Astros. He already played?
Yeah, he had a pinch hit earlier in the game.
Okay, so he was not available for second base.
Right, and that was a mistake, I think, because he pinch hit maybe in the seventh, if memory serves, maybe the eighth, and he hit, you know, soft ground out, and they and I thought maybe they would double switch him in to play second, and they didn't. And, you know, I'm not saying he would have made those plays. Those were not routine. They were not errors by Hap, but there were plays that a good second baseman with any kind of range at all probably makes at least one out of the two, if not both, and certainly knocks them both down so they don't get into the outfield.
Yeah, and I think that makes I think that would have made sense, is that using him for offense when he's not that good an offensive player and not using him for defense, I would say that is a tactical mistake.
Yeah,
that,
especially when Baez,
you're up 5-0 in the seventh. You don't need the pinch hitter to pad your lead. You need the pinch. You need to start positioning for defense.
There's also the argument that Yu Darvish has, in his last six starts, 36 strikeouts and zero walks, with like a 2-something ERA. Last night he was unhittable. Went 7 innings, shutout ball, struck out I think 8 or 9, walked 0. Had 92 pitches, and they took him out after 7. Now, he said after the game that he felt like he was done, so maybe he was. And so that's not, you know, if he's done, he's done. But, man, you pay a guy $125 million, and he's pitching a shutout, and you have to pull him after 92 pitches? It's like, come on.
Yeah,
you would like to think he had a little bit more. You know, he was interesting last night because he was unhittable, but he was still kind of wild.
And that's what made him
unable. Walk anybody, and he was still, because there were so many times when Caratini would be set up outside and he'd just get a guy out on the inside corner, that, or vice versa.
And that's what he mentioned in the post game. He said the reason why he felt like he was done, because halfway through the game he completely lost his mechanics. And he was just out there kind of surviving. And like you said, missing his spot by 2 or 3 feet, but effectively wild and still getting guys out.
Effectively wild is huge when you got stuff like he does.
Right, exactly. But I think it wore on him and probably made him more fatigued than he actually was, because mentally, you know, he's like, what's going on?
Well, he threw a couple curveballs that were 50 feet, so he was pissed at those. You could tell he was pissed.
Yeah. And one of them, he hit a guy on the bounce.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, by the way, is that a new thing? I feel like, when I was younger, if the ball hit the dirt before it hit you, it was not a hit by pitch. And now, over the last 5 years, it's a hit by pitch.
I think it's always been that
way. It always has been? Okay.
But I just don't know if anybody, I never saw it before.
I feel like I see it now all the time. And when, I don't know. I could have swore when I was younger, if the ball hit the ground first and then it hit you, it was not a hit by pitch.
We see Caratini trying to frame the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was pretty funny.
Well, I tell you,
it happens all the time now.
That was just his instinctive move.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story about our man Bob, the commission, Sunday morning softball. You talk about putting guys that aren't exactly your best players, and Madden really does this all the time, and gets away with it. You know, but I have seen in 2016 he got away with it the whole time. Now last year, a few times I saw him like double switch Hayward out of right and put Zobrist out there in like the next play. There's one on the foul line that Zobrist can't get to today where Hayward would have been camped under. I mean, his luck kind of ran out. Well, Bob is the commish. Bob's our age, Kevin. Still can hit, and if you put him at first base and throw it right to him, there's about a, you know, there's a target there which he won't miss it.
But he's a catcher.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bob's a catcher.
Well, he puts himself at shortstop. The game goes 9 innings. In all my years of softball, I never saw a 9-inning game where the shortstop did not get a ball. Didn't hurt us at all. Just saying. A lot of it's luck.
Well.
A lot of it's luck, yeah. But then you also have the inevitable, when we were playing, you know, with the Yaks down on the south side a couple of weeks ago, and we had an injury, and we had to pop somebody into left field for like one batter, and we're like, don't worry, a lefty's up. And the lefty just smokes a line drive right at him in left field, the first pitch. And he caught it because it was right at him. But it's like, talk about the ball finds you. When you don't want it, the ball finds you.
Well, Kevin, remember when we played in that really good league on the Sunday doubleheader? If you brought a new guy, guys would just hit at him to see if he could catch. They knew he was new.
Right.
Which you really can't do in hardball, but you can in softball. But anyway, sort of back to What's going on?
Let me finish the thought, right, and then you can pile on as you see fit. But the point is, I started down the Jack Brewer road because of what he said about fundraising, and that was triggered by Carl's guy. You know, part of it is, yeah, they take control of your communication, but in addition to that, you don't get committee assignments unless you meet fundraising goals. fundraising goals for the for your DNC or RNC. And so you are given that those budget numbers basically that you have to hit, and if you don't, you become a pariah. So they spend a lot of time not just raising money for themselves and their PACs, but they also spend a lot of time raising money for the party. And so they are, in that regard too, they have to deal with the party issues rather than their constituent issues.
Kevin, I think you're spot on.
I think this is all, you know, where the problem lies in our political system is that we are catering to the fringes because that's where the money is.
Well, we also, I mean, when you see people, it's been a long time now, and Maddie probably didn't even remember, but I think one of the nicest men I've ever seen in office, and I thought a really good senator, even though he was on the other side, Kevin, I think you probably were a fan of Paul Simon.
He was a good man.
At least as a person. And when he quit and said he really didn't run for his whatever term, he could have made one more term, maybe two, because he ended up teaching some downstate college for, what, a decade or so, Kevin, but he pulled a Kevin O'Neill. He went to actually teach, didn't go on the rubber chair.
Career capstone, go for the educator.
Well, he didn't go on the rubber chicken circuit and make a fortune. Anyway, when he quit, his signature thing was the bow tie. So if you think of the guy from the bow tie, it's the guy I'm talking about. Is he said he didn't like doing all the fundraising. Well, the first thing that pops to people's mind is, who was ever going to run against him? I mean, everybody loved the guy. I mean, why did he have to get that much money for running for senator of Illinois? And what Kevin is talking about, and Carl, is a whole different level here that I think a lot of people, to be perfectly blunt, Kevin, I didn't understand. I was somewhat tied to this when Nancy Drew Sheehan ran for treasurer in the state. And I actually thought that there was a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. Not the difference everybody's talking about, or everybody likes to think there is. But I thought on the Republican side, I'll start with the Democrats. The Democrats, the National Committee and the party doesn't have a whole lot of dough, if any. So, you know, they're, for lack of a, I'm not saying right, wrong, or in the barrel, the Republican Party has a little more, maybe up until now. There's four or five things that they sort of stood for, okay? Low taxes and this and that. But, so you actually, there are people that would give contributions to the Republican Party and the Republican National Committee. So I always thought those guys were sort of flush in the sense where they could help out people that are running and had trouble coming up with the dough. I knew on the Democratic side that those contributions are not that forthcoming. If somebody has that kind of money, they're going to give it to the candidates they want. They're not going to give it to the party. So it didn't surprise me one skosh when Hillary Clinton poured money into the Democratic National Committee and they favored her, especially because it was a lady running it and they wanted a lady president, which, you know, I know it's politically incorrect, but it's flat out true, in my opinion. So that never surprised me, Kevin, that the Democratic National Committee was a useless organization. And I think in terms of when you talk about the Russians or somebody helping or not helping, I think the computer backup, the ability to market themselves because they had more money, I think the Republicans, at least at the time, were way ahead of the Democrats in terms of capability at that level. I mean, this is what I've sort of learned from people on the show and what I've read. So I was really kind of surprised when Carl was talking about, and what you talk about, is how the Republicans have to come up with money for the committees, because I thought the committees had fundraising on their own and sort of didn't need that. It wouldn't have surprised me on the Democratic side. I'm a little surprised on the Republican side.
You got to have the fuel.
I know, but I thought the Republican National Committee got enough money on their own, because if you're a Republican, Republicans have a little more. In other words, they got all kinds of money. Barack Obama got all kinds of money when he ran. That doesn't mean that they wrote the check to the committee. And it doesn't surprise.
Yeah, and in his case, he was a little bit of an anomaly in that he actually did not fuel the DNC.
Right.
You know, he pretty much, you know, Obama's coffers were Obama's coffers, and you know, that was part of why Hillary Clinton was able to co-opt it so easily, is that he left them broke.
Right. I mean, as a president, I don't think he ran around and did all the fundraisers and kicked one out of two of them to the party to make them whole. I don't think he did at all.
No, I don't think so either.
You know, I mean, and I think,
but he was a different force. I mean, he, Barack Obama, like him, hate him, you have to respect that he became a really, really good politician.
Well, but he also has a massive ego.
Sort of
all him.
In the Bill Clinton mold, that he was a good politician, not necessarily, Bill Clinton wasn't a good man, but he was a good politician.
But I think they both have incredible egos. It's all me. It's not the party. I'm the person here.
And I think they're right.
If you're going to run for president, you're going to stand up in front of 300 million people and say, I should be your leader. Of course you have an incredible ego.
Well, but there are other people who think you get there because people help you on the state level and every other place. I mean, if you run for a Democrat, Kevin, if you or I ran, we'd need 48 sheep and 12 dogs just to get us on the ballots. If you get nominated by a Democratic Party, there's all kinds of people that did all that work for you. I mean, some people like you and I'd be a little thankful for the grunts. Other people, the grunts. Well, of course, that's what grunts do. Work for me. Just saying.
I know. Yeah, I hear you. Not how I teach management, but okay.
So, hey, what are we going to do about this? If we want to do anything, I know that if I was sitting in the Oval Office, and what happened not last night, the night before happened, just like my alderman story, I got to pick up the phone. How many orders did we get from, the SEC chairman would not like me as their boss. Well, not boss, they serve at their pleasure. I'd say, how many orders where did the orders come from last night before that Chinese announcement? I'd want to know the next morning before I got up, Kevin.
You're just too suspicious, Tom.
Every time, have you ever been too overly suspicious of human beings, especially ones in power where money is involved? Is it possible to be too suspicious?
Is there such a thing as overly suspicious?
Yeah.
Probably not.
I mean, so just when
greed,
I think...
for lack of a better word, is good.
Just when I think I'm at the edge of, walking the plank for conspiracy theorists, we'll get Wayne or we'll get Carl back, and all of a sudden I'm like, God, I'm a kid in this room. There's adults... that know more than me, and I. Good Lord! I mean, this is insane, Kevin. When you have this constant back and forth between China and the White House and markets running up and down, how do you even? I was on a show yesterday. I was a guest on Joan Esposito's afternoon show, and she has. I mean, I think we have accumulated on this show people that kind of know the market somewhat, know sports, they know economics a little bit, and there's others. But they're learning as they go, and they want to hear, I'm going to say, a higher level of discourse than you would get in a normal sports show or a normal whatever. And I think that's our clientele, Maddie. I don't know if you think I'm nuts on that, but I think
you're right. And we our crew can spray to all fields, and that's not a lot of people can do that.
But Joan has a nice group, and I think she's really good. She's really nice to be interviewed by. But God, she'll ask some questions like. Okay, Chief, we've been hearing for the last year the yield curve. She goes, I don't think any of my listeners have any idea what that is. Would you mind explaining that? I mean, or it's what are negative interest rates and how exactly do they work? And she's like, let me get this straight. I give somebody $100,000 and at the end of 10 years they give me like $99,500 back. I go, well, yeah.
What a deal.
Yeah, what a deal. But now yesterday she's like, when all of the market is flying back and forth between whether We're going to recession, not going to recession. The Fed's doing this. This country's doing that. We're fighting with China. We're not fighting with China. She goes, how do you know where the real value is? And I'm like, ding, 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 ding. Talk about the million-dollar question, Kevin. I mean, this is what regular people are kind of wanting to know from the alleged experts, guys like me. And what I do is say, the experts don't know. I mean, how does anybody really know? I said, Joan, they've been pouring money into the system, propping up asset prices for 10 years, and now they're getting desperate about it. I said, I don't know if we could stay here for a year and be flat and the companies grow into the prices. We could have a 5% premium. We could have a 50% premium. how does anybody know? We're in uncharted territory. All we know is that they're pouring money to keep 1% or asset prices up. Houses, buildings, baseball teams, football teams. What about the number the guy paid for the Jets or the Nets yesterday? It values the place at $2.3 billion. So in the last 10 years, it's what, gone up 10 times? And we don't think this money's going somewhere with inflation? I mean, any place that you can, if you can service the 1%ers, and I'm not disparaging it. I mean, I don't have any problem with people having money. It's America. But if you can service the 1%ers, if you were to do a CPI on that, on what those guys buy, you know, private jets, private jet services, probably the pilot's salary, you know, skyboxes, beers in the skyboxes. What do you think that CPI is? Not to mention the teams themselves.
I don't think we include that in the formula, do we?
No. But I'm saying that we're not at the point where there's...
Cost of a suite at a ballpark. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Well, I know that my acquaintance, who has, and we'll go nameless, has the best one at the Bear game. He's on the 50, and we'll go nameless, and the Bears is next to him. So the Bears is like on the 45. This is... he retired. I haven't talked to him in, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 years. Guess how much a seat was 5 years ago? One seat. Now, there's 20 tickets in the box.
For the game or for the season?
So it was 5 years ago? I don't know, a couple hundred bucks?
For one game, what was the seat? Now, you got to add the beer and the ribs and the chips and all that crap on top of it. Now, you did get a few parking places. And you got a couple of field passes where people got to walk around for a little while on the field and got to go back up in the box. Guess how much per seat, per game, including exhibition games, by the way.
I said $500. How much was it?
Maddie?
Per seat. This is 5 years ago?
Yeah.
I'll say, I think 500 is a good guess. I'll say 500 as well.
Try 2G.
That was 5 years ago.
5 years ago.
Wow.
40,000 a game.
What is it now?
So 40,000 a game plus times 8 games. Well, 10 games, because you got to buy the preseason too, right?
Right.
Yikes.
Plus...
And you're in a suite, so half of the people aren't there to watch football.
Yeah, plus food, plus booze.
That doesn't include your food and booze?
Oh, no.
Yikes. So you're paying $400,000 per season.
Right.
And you still got to, you know, cover the tab for the food and booze every week.
Yeah, he said they took them to lunch like the year before and said, are you going to go from, you know, 350 to 400? Are you still in?
So what did it go up to from 5 years ago?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to the guy, but I'm sure they're up. But the jump before was like from, you know, 1,500 a game to two. It was a big jump. It wasn't like from, you know, 1,950 to two.
I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, what do you suppose the first level is for the Bulls? I mean, hell, the seats are 350.
You know, I don't care how much money you have. At some point, you look and you say, that's not worth it. It's not, you know, they're ripping me off here.
Well, they are, but you have to be of a size. Kevin, because I happen to know that my buddy or acquaintance who died very early, Jim Tyree at Mesro. Jimmy had first of all, he had two seats in the center court in the folding chairs on the side, because I sat in those. They were 600. God, the guy's been dead for 10 years. There was, they got to be.
I think those are like 850 now or yeah. Something like that. And that might, and they may go up for premium games.
But the team's horrible. So, I mean,
and it has been, yeah.
But his White Sox box, because he was a big White Sox fan. I mean, they had somebody in the firm. Now you got 80 games. They had somebody in the firm that apportioned that box out to all their salesmen on the insurance side. All their salesmen are big hitters on the security side. They got that box 2-3 nights. They better have 10 people there, or 15, or whatever the hell it is. The people better show up. It better not be your family. It better be clients. I mean, it's a real deal. I mean,
our company does that too, and you know, I think that's what you're talking about. I don't think these are stupid people. I think if they're paying $400,000 for that box in the Bear game, they must see some value in it. Otherwise, I don't think they would do it. I mean, ego is part of it, but I also think that they're getting some big hitting clients in there and are doing some multi-million-dollar deals to make it worth it.
If you're doing business
right
in the city,
now let's yeah. flip that. Let's flip that from the guest side. Is that you know it, because now you have an ethical question as a purchasing agent or whatever, you know, as a purchasing manager, whether you're in the purchasing department or you're buying. buying the product. Is it ethical to accept a gift that valuable?
That's a problem, and I think they're running into that, Kevin.
I think it's a real problem.
Because
the example I use in class is, first of all, I always stayed away from it. I didn't even want to do lunches or anything like that. Come meet me in my office. We'll talk business, and, if we sign a contract or something, you want to go celebrate with lunch, fine. If you accept a ticket to the South Bend Cubs game that costs about $10 and maybe sip a beer or two, is that a big deal? No. But on the other hand, if someone in this area offers you a ticket to the Cubs game, and oh, by the way, it's a night game and it's late, so we'll stay overnight at the Drake and I'll buy you dinner at pick one of the good places in town, Gene and George Eddie's or something like that, then fine. Is that ethical? And I would say no. You're accepting a gift of tremendous value. It's called a bribe.
Well, it actually. I just, I have to go retake my stuff forever. I think it's over, I should know this off the top of my head, Kevin, but I think it's $50 or $75, you have to report it.
Yeah, usually.
And the last thing you want to do is fill out that paperwork for $50 to $75. So it used to be on the trading floor, you gave, the member firm guys, you'd buy them a bottle of booze or something. If you gave them a bottle was worth $50, they're like, I don't even want it. Because I don't want to fill out the damn thing. And my boss say, well, who is that guy and why did he give you a bottle? You don't want to do that with 50 different people. So, yeah, but we're talking about in the city, are you bringing people and their family and blah, 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 and then everything that the kids want to see a Bear game? I
can tell you in my experience, very few, if any, of my customers have ever had the ethical and moral backbone of you and Kevin, because they accept everything. And it doesn't, and it doesn't mean they're going to sign a deal with you either. Absolutely, let's go. And then it's as if it never happened when it comes time to negotiate the contract.
I think somehow or another, I need to get somebody on here, but I have a feeling that if you go, okay, it's still sort of okay in a lot of ways. If you don't and somebody just gives you, four $350 tickets to the Bulls game, that's a problem. If they're with you.
There's different lines, different companies have different rules, and so on. I just like to stay above it, period. To me, it's just not a good idea to be, to even look like you're beholden to anyone.
Well, somebody picking up the tab. Well, Rasinkowski, we'll go over a minute here. It's an interesting story. But every night in New York in Washington, when he was there, Danny would have a table, and the table would get as big as, as a constituent, Matty, if you had a problem, you called his office, said, I need to speak with Mr. Rasinkowski. They'd say he's having dinner at, it was Morton's every night. And there would be a lobbyist there, and it would be his night to pay, and there could be 25 people there, and you'd get your 5 or 10 minutes with Rasty, and by the way, you'd end up with a steak and as many martinis as you could hoover. And, that was part of the deal. And Danny never paid for him, a lobbyist did. And neither did you. They didn't give you a second check. That's how, and people were always welcome at his table, if you weren't an ex-murderer. And, that's how he did business. And one lobbyist, we all knew where the check was going to, and it was never going to him and never going to you or me. I mean, there's people do business that way. Then here's a guy that all of a sudden they decided they wanted him out and they got him on stamps. Who gives a rat's behind about stamps, really? But somebody got him. Kevin, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. SP Futures up 24. NASDAQ Futures up 77. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, everybody, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 25. The NASDAQ futures up 81. We've been kind of right here most of the morning. Dow's up like 225. I'm going to sneak us back, Maddie, to last Friday when we were at we closed at 291 on the SPY. We've been up, down all over the place all week, and now we're 287.25. So we're down $4, which is one and a third percent, 1.5%. So at the end of the day, if you sort of kept your powder dry and didn't do anything, you're sort of right back to where you were, at least in the averages. But we've had individual areas in the market. I've never, like I said, I was a guest on Joan Esposito's show yesterday, which I really love doing because...
So I haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, and she doesn't seem to have, like, a podcast where you can go back and listen to the archives.
Oh, yes, the other day. I found it.
You did find it?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like I looked a couple months ago, and I couldn't find it. I'll look again.
Yeah, you got to dig through the individual ones, and then there's something, because I was able to go back, and I kind of knew the time I was
okay,
able
nice.
To play it. But it...
She seems to have a pretty good show and a nice following, so...
Well, she was terrific on TV years and years ago.
She was a news anchor, right?
Yeah.
A local Chicago news anchor. Was she Channel 5 or Channel 7?
I'm thinking 7, but again, there was all kinds of controversy, and she left the business for a while, and she's back, and she's pleasant. She always was pleasant, and she's bright. I mean,
she your age?
No, I think she's younger. Well, not that much younger. I mean, she's not like she's 30. If I had a guess, well, I don't know. I'm going to guess late 40s.
But oh, I thought she was quite a bit older than that.
You know what? I honestly have no idea. I know I've known her for a long time, or at least I've known of her. So I don't, I don't think I've ever been in a situation. It always bothers me, Maddie, when, Mike Royko wrote an article once about when you ask somebody what he does for a living, if he can't say it in five words or less, you don't trust the guy. You know, type of thing. You know, I fight fires. I build houses. You know, I pave streets. I mean, there's like a definition that people do it. He says, "Well, I'm sort of a consultant," and I immediately don't want to trust the guy. Type of thing. And
oh yeah,
I'm at a point now where you ask a question. There's no easy answer. There is not a question anywhere that you can ask because it's. And I think it all comes down to. When I used to take my economic tests, you know, in class, and I did that for God's sake, 6 years, and in order for you to give an economic answer, somebody has to sort of define the environment. In a world of perfect competition, if this happens, what's likely to happen afterward? Or what's the equal and opposite reaction? Or let's assume it's a monopoly. If this happens, then what happens? How much the prices move? Who eats what? Who does the other? Or a cartel, which is always trickier because it's kind of half between the two. So I don't know how you, when somebody asks you a question, I don't know how you define the environment. It seems to change by the day, or by the hour. I mean, the headlines this morning, let's see, I'm gonna see if it's still here on CNBC is, can the Fed, does the Fed have the ammunition to save the economy before? Did they save the economy before? Did they do any good? What part are you talking about? Are you talking about the initial when the money market funds were going to break the buck and all there was all these run on the money market funds and they ended up and they had some longer term stuff so you're going to break these people and take tremendous. By the way, Matt, do you even remember what that was all about?
What was it all about?
When they had a run on money market funds and they were going to break the buck and needed all this injection, you might ask, why would a money market fund need to have a run on it? Or why would they have a problem? It's all supposed to be short term, right?
Right.
Well, as time goes by, like if you go into a bank and you were to say, use a Bonanza example, if everybody in Virginia City just dumps their money in the bank, you're going to say... They just keep it. It's in the vault. That's it. That's all they do. Is there like a safety deposit box with your name on it without already having a key? There's no such thing as a bad run on the bank. Everybody goes and gets their money, right? I mean, it might take you a while in line, but it's all there.
Right.
Well, if banks do what banks are supposed to do, and they got $1 million in there, and they say, well, gee, Joe Cartwright wants to buy a new horse, we'll loan him $100 for the horse. Okay, well now, you still got, $99,900, right? But you don't have all 100. So and there's all kinds of studies.
But you're going to get 110 back from Joe.
Well, right. But I'm saying that's how banks make money and that's how depositors get interest.
Right.
If the banks didn't lend out any money, there'd be no interest to give people. That's why I'm so concerned about where we're heading here. People are losing the idea of how this all works. Banks charge people for loans because people can make more money on what their projects are or whatever than the loan costs them. Okay? And then other people want to put their money in the bank. They don't want to find a guy for the loan. That's what the bank does. They're an intermediary. They take your money at 3%. They loan it out to that's a bad term. Thomas at 6% because Thomas has got a building to build and he's going to make 10%. This is how the world is supposed to work.
Is that how you got your money back from Thomas?
not exactly. But when you start losing the thought process, you should always be able to pull back and say, okay, how does this work? You know, and I learned that when I was on a trading floor, because I used to do this neutral spreading where I buy, you know, three of these or four of these, sell three of these for this price based on where the volatility was. That's how we all learned. But there were no computers on the floor. So I would flip the ticket up and I would write the delta down there in the price of the stock. So if I got to the floor and the stock was up or down a buck, I could use the deltas and move, okay, this one's a 60 delta and I got four of those. All right, so that moves up to this, that means I should pay a little bit more for that one, but I should get a little bit more for the other ones. And I can kind of make my calculation. Instead of paying 3 7/8 for it, I'll pay 4 1/8 or something. Or guess what? I'll only pay 3 5/8. I mean, I would have some way of making the calculation or be a method to it. Because I understood, plus I would always say, all right, do I need a stock contingency on this? If the stock moves $100, do I make money on the spread or do I lose? If the answer is if I made money, I'll do it at this price no matter where it is. If somebody's stupid enough to do it for me up $20, I'll be happy to do it there because I've already made $10 on it type of thing. So you don't have to worry about it. Other ones though, if you have a short premium position no matter what it is, you're probably going to say, I'm only going to do this for the stock between 79 and 81. If it gets outside of that, I don't want to do it. Throw my spread on the floor. So you learn this stuff when you don't, but when you get all the machines, I'm not against machines. I mean, nobody likes, you know, an automatic dryer better than me because I used to help my aunt put the stuff through the wringer. I don't want to do that anymore. I like all the convenience part, but if it starts getting away from your brain, I mean, to where you're using your own common sense, I mean, right now we're talking about the Fed making a 75-cent move when they're already at 2%, 75-basis-point move. So that brings them down to 1.25. Well, our interest rate is, our inflation rate is at least 2. And if you're a conspiracy theorist like me and Dave and everybody else here, it's somewhere north of 6. So let's say it's 3, for lack of a better term, and be nice to the people. Well, okay. If your interest rate is 3, your inflation rate is, or your interest rate is 2 and your inflation rate is 3, you're already negative, right?
Yeah.
So do you really, I mean, where do you want to go with this? Does the Fed throwing money at a dormant economy make sense? Does just money pouring in make sense? Now, oh, anyway, I'm back to my story about breaking the buck. It's sort of like the bank. I'm sorry I'm all over the place. But as time went by, Manny, money market funds, they would say, look, there's never been a day when Manny Weber, his brother, his family, Thomas, his family, his sister, there's never been a day when everybody showed up and said they wanted their money back from the money market fund. So even though we're supposed to be short-term and very liquid, really, if we're 40% T-bills, which I could get rid of in a nanosecond, or say 10% cash, or 5%, we've never had a day where more than 5% of the people have ever redeemed on this thing. Ever. And we've been in business 30 years. And by the way, here's Dan Howe's fund, and he's been in business 50 years, and he's never had a day that he went over 4 or 5% either.
And that would be true about any banking institution, yeah. Right? I mean, even at Chase, if every single person withdrew all their money tomorrow...
You can't.
They couldn't. I mean, no. They couldn't. They don't. There's no way that would work.
So, but a money market fund is, quote, supposed to be liquid. So as time went by, they've got some stuff that's out 90 days, some 120 days. You're not going to find a 30-year bond in there. I mean, there's no way you're going to find that. But by and large, it got to the point where I've been these numbers above the top of my head that maybe even a Vanguard money market fund would have 25% of their stuff is, say, 90-day paper. Or 120-day paper or something. It's not, 2050, but it's not tomorrow either. Because you could look at the stats and say, look, this has never happened. You know, the worst it's ever been is 5%. And by the way, we've got reserves of 20. That should be good enough. And we've challenged, because we've done such a bad job of, when I say regulation, I'm not talking about, looking up our address when we're in the can, which is what these guys want to do. They want a de minimis of PTI, but they really should be there to say, hey, why is all this money coming over here from Japan buying these mortgage things, inflating this stuff up? Because all these guys are buying this stuff in Japan or borrowing money there at 1%, and they're buying into these interest or these mortgage things at 6%. This is getting out of control. That you and I mean, as much as I like to say that I do a nice job managing money for people, I have no idea if that's happening. I mean, I'm not a privy to the international money flows. Neither are you. Now that's why we pay a Federal Reserve. They're supposed to see this crap. They didn't. So the place blows up, and now it's everybody else's fault, and they're gonna lob money at the system. I can show you, if I dug myself into my place for a week, I can show you examples of where the Fed's throwing money. Now, they needed to save the, quote, system, because there was a drain on the system that day, or that week, or that month. Okay, they needed to stop the run on the money market funds by saying, we will provide the liquidity. That's what the Fed does. They did a beautiful job at that. Instead of stopping there and saying, okay, we did our job, then the idea to just keep winging money at the rest of the place, because the first thing that happens, especially if you cater to the rich people, if stocks go down 50% or houses go down 50%, what's the first thing you're going to say? Well, maybe stocks were too high or maybe houses were too high. No. You say, we got to get these prices back up. Now, how the hell are we going to do that? We're going to pour money into the system. All right, but now what does that do? It creates inflation. Well, we're going to lie about the inflation, and we'll see what happens.
And ignore everything the past that shows us what's going to happen if we do that.
Right. So it pops up in a few areas, and it's meds. It's in high-end assets. It's in, paintings that go off at Sotheby's, those kinds of things. It doesn't seem to have, because we've had, oil stayed down or pretty much down, and we've had commodity prices stay pretty much. It doesn't seem to have affected everybody as much as the last time. But it's even more, in some ways, it's more insidious than the last time, because savers, when inflation got to 10%, were still getting 12. Or when it got to 13%, they were still getting 15 or 15.5. Where now, savers are getting less. So a saver is losing money every year and has been now for a decade. Somebody who doesn't get a raise every year, which is most people, have been losing money for a decade. So the problem you've created by doing it this way is so dramatically different than the problem you created in the early 80s. And I'm going to go on a limb, Maddie, and I'm going to say the problem you created this time is worse, because you continue to beat up on the equity of the average American, where in the old days you really didn't. Because the guy with the house was okay. Now, there was a huge difference in how well you did as to whether or not, if you owned a house and I didn't, you did way better than I did. So there's always a disparity here. And the trick is to try and keep things even so there isn't that kind of a disparity. I mean, in the last 8 years, when a lot of these people got booted out of their houses, the difference between somebody who became a homeowner at that low price and somebody who was able to have stock versus the average wage owner in the last 8 years, 10 years, what is the difference in how those two people have performed? It's like one chart's pointing north and the other's pointing south, right? I mean, it's a dramatic difference. I mean, and I think if you really looked at it and had a group of people from different walks of life, you're going to find out in the last 8 or 9 years, in certain segments of the population, savers, just regular wage owners that don't own stock, or people that don't own their own home, I'm going to say that you've created a greater disparity than you did in the 70s and 80s.
Because they're not making any money on the money they saved.
Right. And because they don't have the asset prices that are going up.
Right.
I mean, a house is almost back to where it was, which is fine if you and Jill got in one because they threw Thomas and somebody out. No, Thomas paid $250, it went to $160, you and Jill got in at $160, now it's back to $240. You're in a bed of roses. They're in a bed of thorns.
And a lot of it's just based on luck of timing.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and I think most people realize that, whether they say it publicly or admit it or not. I mean, you can't control what era you're become of age in.
Right.
But everyone has a cycle. You go to high school, you go to college, you get your first job, you get your second job. All of a sudden, you get engaged, you get married, you have your first kid, and at that point, she says, "Hey, we need to buy a house."
Yep.
It doesn't really matter if the market's at the top, the middle, or the bottom. It for a lot of people, it's like, okay, that's what we got to do. And so, you know, if you were unfortunate enough to buy it at the 250, like you mentioned, and then it went down to 160 the next year, you're screwed. And if you're lucky enough to buy it at the 160, you might not be some smart guy compared to the other guy.
It's all timing.
It's all timing and a lot of ways luck.
Well, in my experience, I mean, obviously I was not alive during the Depression, although some people accuse me of that. There's been ups and downs in real estate, but never to the point where people ever thought that equity in an American home was bad collateral. I mean, whatever the market price was, the market price. I mean, there's been times when I knew people on the trading floor for 19 years where they bought a home in a subdivision. They pick a number, 240, and they lived in there for 10 years, and all of a sudden there's a newer subdivision, and the houses are 250, so there's no way yours appreciated at all. And maybe with a little wear and tear, somebody'd rather the new one at 250, and you might have to puke yours out at, you know, 230 or something, but it wasn't 170. And it was a time, but, and the interesting part when this all happened is, as much as I don't like to really give grumpy old white guys a bunch of crap, they deserved it, because they would actually point fingers at the moral hazard. Well, like you're saying, what was the routine when I was your age, when I met you? You basically piled out of college. Maybe you lived at home for a little while if you're going to grad school like I did. Then you got an apartment near where the girls were, studio. Then you got a roommate. You got a 2-bedroom.
Yep.
Then you got a girlfriend. Okay, you booted the roommate out. You know, then you got the house. You know, you had the baby. You moved from the 1-bedroom to the 2. You had the second baby, and you're going, this high-rise living ain't cutting it. You buy the home. The timing is totally, it's totally dependent on when your mother and dad decided to have you.
Yep.
Basically. Exactly right. And all of a sudden you get to a spot. And
when you got the 2 babies, you can't look at the life and say, you know what, I think if we wait 10 years,
right,
the market will be a little bit better.
Right. I mean, that ship doesn't sail. Were you amazed at the time how many people would have been your 25 years, about the same time, guys, if you'd have been earlier at this, it could have been you. Where you bought the house, maybe even the parents lent you the $40,000 for the down payment.
Well, the thing is, if I could be in position, let's say in the next 3 to 5 years, to want to do something like that. Are we going to have another crash?
Well,
right when I buy at the top, I don't know. It's almost looking like that could happen again.
I think if you bought a condo in the city right now, combination of the two dangers you have, are one is the interest rates. 5 years from now, when you decide to sell it, are probably going to be higher. So that person's going to have to pay more to get into it than you did.
Right.
Interest rate-wise. And the city's basically telling you another 5 years, we're doubling taxes again. So if you look at what you're paying per month, what that person's going to have to pay per month 5 years from now, even at the exact same price, you might say, that's why all these buildings in the city down here are all rental now. Nobody wants to take that risk. Did you see, by the way, that I'll tell the story about Lake Point Tower.
Yet they're building everywhere. Oh, my God. Yeah. I was walking around the West Loop the other day, and it's crane after crane after crane after crane. I mean, it's incredible.
But they're all rentals. 20 years ago, you would never have done it with rentals.
Right. No, that's a good point.
Well, Lake Point Tower, they want to bid. I just read the other day in Cranes. They want to. There's got to be. The place is 90 stories. How many condos do you think are in there? 400?
At least.
Well, say it's 400. They want to bid everybody over market price for their condos and turn in rental. After fighting for 20 years to turn the place condo. I never dreamed that would ever happen.
I've never heard of that.
I haven't either. I mean, so what? Somebody's going to pay you over market. Why wouldn't you sell it to them and just rent it back from them? And move when you want to move.
I know the building my buddy and his girlfriend just moved into, that same thing must have happened, because it's at, like, Halstead in Washington over there, and that's kind of a booming area now, right on the edge of the West Loop, and it's a building that was all condos, and now there's, like, hardly any condos left. It's all rental.
Because individual owners are renting them, or because somebody came in and bought them?
I think someone came in and bought them.
That's, I, you know what? If you'd have told me somebody was going to do that 30 years ago, I'd have said, are we already doing marijuana? I would have asked you. I mean, I would never even have dreamed of that.
Yeah.
SP Futures up 26, NASDAQ Futures up 82. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Yeah, you do realize that when you ask me this Procter & Gamble question, you're taking me down the road of mergers and acquisitions of the course that I refused to take at the University of Chicago. I got out of accounting as soon as I had to take that. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money.
They've bought everyone over the years, haven't they?
Yeah, it's available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. I actually had an accounting concentration going. In order to become an accounting concentrate guy, you had to take this class that you basically worked through an entire merger and acquisition over the course of the quarter. It was so much time, they told you that you better only take three courses that quarter. But I was trying to graduate early and I needed to take four, so I said screw it and didn't take it. So that's essentially the story on that. S&P futures up 25. We've been here the whole morning. NASDAQ futures up 79. We're really only off by, you know, a couple of points, so it's been very steady. Overnight, the news out of Washington was that the Chinese talks are still on. We're going to have a deal, you know, blah, blah, blah. The Chinese were still on board yesterday saying now after they made their money on the downside by saying there's going to be retaliation, then they said we're going to meet in the middle on these talks. So, anywho, so that kind of is I'm waiting for my response here. I got so many pages open because there's Procter & Gamble. Anyway, traffic, weather, sports, and I'll do this.
I can do that. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Off to a great start on a Friday morning on your area expressways, roadways, and tollways. It looks like the Kennedy and the Eisenhower are our two slowest moving expressways, but no accidents to report. But if you're coming in on the Edens or the Stevenson or any of the Southside expressways, you're looking great. No issues to report, no stalled vehicles, no extensive delays. Off to a great start out there. Same for your suburban tollway. So I'll keep you posted if that should change, but we're off to a great start on a Friday morning. Keep in mind, it's the Air and Water Show weekend. The final practice is today, and I think the official event begins tomorrow morning. So expect a lot of traffic coming in over the weekend from the suburbs and surrounding areas. And that first time you hear the fighter jet fly over and you think you're under attack, just remember, it's Air and Water Show weekend.
The British guys, are they up like a high-end team like the Blue Angels, or are they?
I think so, yeah.
So they're going to be running around fast, too.
I think so, yeah. I don't know for sure. I think this is the 61st year of the Air and Water Show. Is that sound right?
It's been a long time, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the 61st year.
They only canceled 1 year because of all that rain, remember?
Yeah.
Was that like 5 years ago?
I think it was, yeah, five or 6 years ago. So keep that in mind, but everything else looking good out there. Weather today, some isolated showers rolling in the area. Today, about a 40% chance of rain. Tomorrow, 30%. Sunday, back up to 40%. So don't be surprised if we get some showers. But relatively pleasant temperatures in the upper 70s and low 80s throughout the weekend. Today, a high of 79. Right now, it's mostly clear and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 111 today. Right now, it's clear and 86. In sports, Cubs blew a 5-0 lead in Philadelphia last night, highlighted by a Bryce Harper walk-off grand slam that went at least 500 feet. He hit it in the third deck to walk off and sweep the Cubs in Philly. 7-5 was the final. Blowing a 5-0 lead hurts. Luckily for the Cubs, the Cardinals lost as well, so they remain tied with St. Louis atop the NL Central on a virtual tie. St. Louis is 1 percentage point ahead. Cubs have played 2 more games. White Sox lost to the Angels last night on the West Coast. 8-7 was the final in that one. Diamondbacks lost to the Giants. 7-0. And lastly, it's Bears preseason game number 2 tonight. 6:30 p.m. Chicago time kickoff. Bears at the New York Giants.
I assume you'll be glued to that.
I didn't watch 1 second of game 1, and I don't plan to watch 1 second of game 2.
There are people that actually, a lot of people like going to the exhibition games. Of course, it's not here because, you know, it's kind of, it's a nice night.
The hell likes to going to the exhibition games?
Some people that have, their kids have never been to Soldier Field. It's a lot less.
Well, that would make sense because you can get tickets for like $5.
Yep.
And because people are just saying, hey, I'd like to get something back. And, if you're taking a family of four or something, and I that would make sense. The weather's always warm.
Yep.
Other than that, I mean, it's just, I can't think of anything more boring.
I can't either. I was there one night where it was called because it got so much rain. They called the game with about 4 minutes left.
Oh, really?
It was the old Soldier Field. And
I can't believe you made it that long.
Well, my uncle wouldn't leave. He's one of those knuckleheads.
Oh, okay.
And so there was so much water in the end zone, and some guy dives for this catch on the 5-yard line. He slides in the end zone, and the water was like over his head. He almost drowned. And then they decided they better
waterboarded call himself.
Yeah, pretty much. Dow up 235 over in Europe. We've got the DAX up 96.8%. It was up a full 1%. So we're leaking a little bit from the highs, but still pretty darn high. FTSE up 36. That's 0.5%. CAC around up 50.9. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei up 13. Call that flat. Shanghai up 8. That's 0.3%. Hang Seng's the only one really moving. Up 238.9%. We've got, again, the bond number, 1.54. The Bund, minus 0.71. We've got oil up 42 cents. And we've got gold down $8, but still 15.23. Still pretty high. Matt, you had a question because I've been doing some research on it here.
Yeah, we just had a couple listeners that are asking what's going on with Procter & Gamble. And because my computer is down, I have no idea what's going on with Procter & Gamble, so I thought I would throw it over to the expert.
I faintly heard this the other day, but they took an $8.5 billion write-down on their goodwill for Gillette. But they say they have no plans to sell Gillette. Now, okay. You've been listening to the show forever. What did I just say?
Well, they bought a loser, it sounds like.
What happens when you buy a company, again, and I did not take this course, but I know a little bit about it. When you buy a company, how does that work on your books?
You get all of their assets and all their debts, right?
Okay. So if I were to buy Maddie Weber Inc., Mercedes and all the other stuff. And I get
you'd probably be right at zero.
Okay, so all right, so but suppose I didn't. Suppose I paid $1,000 for it. So if I summed up all the stuff on Maddie Weber Inc.'s books, the book value, and it's $1,000, and I just paid two, now what do I do? The books that I'm adding, Matt Weber Inc., that I'm now going to add to Stocks and Jocks Inc.
Right. So you paid $1,000 for it.
No, I paid two, and if I look at all,
and it's worth $1,000.
It's worth $1,000 book value. It might be worth 90 bazillion, but the books say $1,000, and I just paid two.
Now, I don't know what you would do next.
You put it now. Of course, I'm doing double entry accounting, so $2,000 is coming out.
Right.
Right. And all this other crap's going on, but it only adds up to $1,000.
Right.
Now, for most people, that would be out of balance, correct?
Correct.
How do I make it balance?
You pull from something else?
No.
What do you do?
I say that I bought, the plug term is called goodwill.
And what the hell does that mean?
It means goodwill. It means that the value of the company is more than the book value, in my opinion.
Because
you just, who knows? The building
you don't have to give any reason behind it?
Well, you paid for it. So in other words, if I know that Maddie Weber has this old building in the West Loop, for instance, this depreciation, you paid $1 million for it 20 years from now, and you've written it down to where it's $100,000 on your books, and all of a sudden right now the market value of it's $10 million. So when I buy your company, I say, well, you say, well, hey, my building's worth 10, and I say, okay, I pay you a price for your company commensurate with that building now being worth 10. Okay, so I'm paying you $10 million, and you got it written down to $100,000.
So even though the books say it's a $100,000 asset, because it's, you know, goodwill wise, it's worth 10.
Well, I don't know. I hope.
Or you hope.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So when these guys bought,
so do you actually write the words goodwill on the accounting book?
If you look at somebody's balance sheet, you'll say goodwill, and the first thing in your mind is, who did these guys buy?
Right, okay.
And then was it a good buy or not? And then what you do is you depreciate that over time. Okay, now, so you're going to say over the next 20 years, now these guys paid, in 2005, they paid $57 billion for Gillette.
Okay.
I'm going to guess, just off the top of my head, and the listeners probably know more than us, I'm going to guess that the book value of Gillette was 8, maybe 10.
Yeah, I would say yeah.
Maybe
Maybe.
So now you've got. Let's be nice and say you got a $40 billion chunk sitting there in goodwill. Now, the business. Now, some accountant might have come by and said, "By the way, based on our audit, it looks to me like you guys paid too much for this place. You better write some of this down." Okay, now why they picked 8.5, why it wasn't 9 or 8 or 8.75, who the hell knows. But somebody makes an estimate and said, you're materially misrepresenting your balance sheet now by saying this 40-some billion extra is actually worth something. You got to knock this down some. Depreciating it isn't cutting it, because you thought you were going to make 90 bazillion a year on Gillette, and you're actually only making 75. Okay, so Procter & Gamble says, okay. So they write off $8.5 billion to expenses. Now, it's not a cash expense, because they already paid out the money, right? So it's a non-cash expense, so it doesn't really affect you as a shareholder. But you sit there and go, these bleeps paid too much, basically, right? Well, you know, because now here it is, 14 years later, they got a lot of competition by these, you know, these razors that people are doing online and sending home and so forth. But that's what happens. So it's a non cash type of thing. Now whether, you know, Gillette probably still has, I mean, I say Gillette, Procter & Gamble, if they borrowed all that money, you know, maybe they're still paying on those bonds or something. But still, right now, you've got this thing on the balance sheet, and instead of the balance sheet being worth, well, if that line is worth $40 billion, you know, the rest of P&G might be worth $40 billion. And the accounting company says, hey guys, you know, this place is not worth 80. It's not worth the 40 on this line plus the 40 we know is accurate. So let's start knocking it down. You know, if the company was making you $10 billion a year, then we'll leave it there and we'll just depreciate it over however many years, 40 years or whatever we normally would. So that's what happened. So they made a special assessment essentially, but said they're still confident in the business and we're not selling it. Because I got news for you. I don't think it's worth $57 billion today. For them to go out and sell it to somebody else at 20, that's probably a deal they really don't want to make. And talk about putting egg on their own face, huh?
So what has the stock been doing over the last few days since that all came out?
Like I said, it's a non-cash. Well, this week, I'll find out what they've been doing. PG, it's right in the Dow. It's up 41 cents today.
Okay.
The chart is they reached the all-time high of 122 and
I think that's probably what the question was. Yeah, is why is the stock at an all-time high when this doesn't really sound like positive news?
But it's a 14-year-ago deal.
Right.
And it's only one part of what PG does. So yeah, it was at the time, if you could find the people on the board and say, you idiots paid $10 billion too much for this place, they probably did. Maybe it was $20 billion too much.
Well, I've always wondered how that works because, and I won't get into the numbers or anything, but my company was acquired, the company I work for was acquired 3 years ago, and I won't say the exact numbers. You could probably do the research relatively easy and figure it out. But I would say they were sold for about, in my opinion, about five times more than what they're worth.
Yeah.
But I understand that, you know, that's part of it, is you're projecting what they could be worth as part of it when you're when you're buying somebody.
Well, you're also saying...
But it seemed to me like, I was like, wow, that is a huge number.
Well, you've got an ego that says, I can run the place better than this. By the way, they've got this whole upper layer of management. I don't even like these people. We can fire their asses. And now the term would be synergy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The synergy is, you know, $300 million. So the company has been making $100 million, I'll say. By the time we fire all these guys and I put my special management potion on it, that $100 million is going to become $400 million. And guess what? I just bought I got the pearl out of the clam, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And these are men of enormous egos. And by the way, the people that work the merger for you, the mopes at Goldman Sachs and these other places are gonna totally talk you up on what the place is worth with your special brand of management, and of course they're gonna help you, right?
Because they want it to go for as high as possible because their cut's bigger, right?
Well, yeah, and then they'll say, well, we also, I don't know if you guys had a division that might have been slow. I mean, with Procter & Gamble, if you brought somebody in to say, let's buy Procter & Gamble, okay, maybe, and you go pick Amazon or somebody. You know, what if Amazon can buy Procter & Gamble and all those consumer goods? They'd say, well, guess what? First thing we'll do is you think this Gillette clunker, we just wrote down $8 billion. I could find you a stiff that'll actually pay $60 billion for Gillette today. So, Amazon, you bid $120 billion for Procter & Gamble, and I'm not going to assure you, but come on, guys, I can sort of assure you that buy the thing, I'll puke out Gillette for $60. So now you're down to $40 or $50, which everybody would love to pay for P&G if without that Gillette clunker in there. And oh, by the way, you get to fire 5,000 people, and you're a genius. And by the way, with our help, this $50 billion, it'll be like $200 billion. You know, that's the story you get.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Now, whether you believe it or not, whether that comes to fruition, you know, then a year from now, the guy comes back and I said, remember that $60 billion I could get you for Gillette? God, these guys, where did the upstart, shave company or the razor company, and JD's got them. He gave me one of them. I didn't like it that much. Who were the guys that the online guys?
The Dollar Shave Club or whatever.
The Dollar Shave Club.
Yeah, those guys are huge.
And who's there's?
My brother uses them. I've never used them.
There's somebody with somebody's name on it. There's a name too, Randy's or somebody's.
Yeah, I don't know.
And so yeah, they're taking a shot at these guys. So I mean, it's all in whether you believe these mopes because they're making money all along the line.
PG bought Oral-B too, didn't they? The toothbrush company, or did Gillette buy them? And then,
well, then I think Gillette might have bought them, and these guys, I'm not positive.
Yeah, because Oral-B was like a huge, it still is a huge toothbrush, probably the biggest toothbrush company, aren't they?
Yeah, these,
Procter & Gamble owns them too.
Well, these consumer things go back and forth. I mean, look at times, you know, Heinz is going to buy Kraft. Oh no, they spin out Kraft. Somebody else bought the cream cheese part of crap. I mean, this stuff, they're constantly being spun around because these consulting firms are constantly saying, hey, these guys are, Kraft isn't worth a squat with, with a Heinz Kraft or whatever with somebody else. But boy, if you could get rid of all these people and move their headquarters from, you know, Podunk, Idaho to, you got space here in Chicago, you can't fill up, just move everybody here. So now look at the synergy there. There's a building you built that's too big because you can't rent it. We'll just move these people in there. Now you got a renter on your face. We just close the place out, fire everybody in Podunk, Idaho. I mean, how do you think all this stuff happens? For reasons sometimes that aren't very good. I mean, when Pullman and United Airlines, and I'm going to say, I could probably rattle off 10 if I thought of them, all the mergers in the late 70s, early 80s, I won't say all, but virtually all of them were done for ERISA reasons. Now, will we have any idea what I'm talking about when I say that? In those days, people had defined benefit programs. A place like Pullman had, you didn't have a 401k, you had a defined pension plan that they paid in for, and that was part of your income. And if you were there 5 years, you became, quote, vested. So if you left after six and you were 35 years old, when you got to be 65, you're going to start getting a check per month. It might have been, you know, $50 or $100 or something, but you were vested. You were in the program. So what happened was, when we were talking about interest rates earlier, you know, no man can do one thing. All these people, because Robin, who's been a contributor to the show, was on the Pullman Pension Board. Robin's a brilliant lady. I mean, and she was on there, I don't even think she was 30 years old. She was on the Pullman Pension Board.
Impressive.
Yeah, and she said they would talk about sober people, and they would sit there and say, we're talking 40 years from now. What piece of information do you need for this, Manny? To pick out how much money you've got to give every month to fund this pension plan for the year 2025 or 2035 or 45.
It almost doesn't matter what information you have.
Well, sure, no, it matters a lot.
Well, that's why all these pensions are not funded properly.
Well, but they don't want to fund them properly. But if you know the actuarial numbers of your people, Matty Weber's 35. He's going to live. He's going to retire at 65. As of now, you know, everybody's pretty healthy here. I'm going to bet right now that since you've made it to 35 and haven't died from a childhood disease or died at birth, I'm going to guess that you're projected age, even though white males have been dropping, I'm going to say you're still 87, 86 somewhere, or 83 maybe, right? So
yeah, I mean, there's an actuarial table, obviously,
yeah.
For, you know, once you hit this tier, then you're likely going to go here. Once you hit this tier, you're likely going to go there. Are you a smoker or a non-smoker?
Right.
You know, all that stuff factors in. Yeah, no, I get that.
All right, so you get the report from those guys, okay? Then you say, our investments, what are we going to average on investments for the next 50 years? Now, there's a number. And people used to be very conservative. I think Pullman's number was 3. And Robin said they raised it to like 3.5 grudgingly. It was like, you know, it was like one vote. Because the older guys are going, Well, you know, we're never going to average 3.5. Now, you're talking about all stocks, all bonds, and money, and, you know, T-bills and all this stuff in there, because in the 50s, it was 2.25. So, you know, in the 70s, for people to say we're going to make 3.5, well, then what happens? We get this ridiculous stuff with Volcker and the Vietnam War and the money supply, and all of a sudden, for like 5 years, they're making 12 or 13 or something just by having it in the bank, right? Which was talking about easy money. Now, the stock part went down, but I bet they were more in short-term interest-bearing than they ever were in stock. People didn't trust stocks that much back then. So all of a sudden now they're $50 million over. The number is $50 million over what the actuarial people told them they needed. They never missed a contribution, and they're still putting money in based on this 3.5% number. Now, the company themselves, based on ERISA laws, you can't say to yourself, we're $50 million over, we can drain some of this out, we put too much in. You couldn't do that. Now, if you bought the company from the outside, this is how screwed up why our government basically bleeps up things, they don't even know what they're bleeping up. If you came in from the outside, if Manny Weber came in and said, I'll pay $1 billion for Pullman, and I'm going to look at this pension thing, what you can do is you can say, here's 5,000 people in the pension plan, me being one of them, and I wasn't even vested. If you vest everybody, because I had only been there 4.5 years, if you vest everybody, you can essentially go buy these people who you're now going to lay all off anyway. That Manny Weber's been there 10 years. Here's his piece, based on all the formulas we used before. They're going to buy you an annuity that says, Matty, we're either going to give you $1,000 right now, or by the time you're 65, you're going to get $800 a month. And you say, okay. But the sum of all those annuities is like $50 million less than what's in the fund. That company got to drain out the $50 mil. And that's why Pullman and these places got bought. Why did United Airlines become UAL Inc.? They now own United Airlines because they bought it out and drained the pension fund. I mean, if you were to ask yourself why, how could there possibly be a problem in the pension fund for pilots or stewardesses or mechanics after the late 70s where people were making 12 and 13% a year when they thought they were going to make 3? You couldn't possibly have bleeped it up after that. You had so much money. But they all got drained. But little known favorite college rule. People will screw up anything, man, when there's money involved. So these people came in, they bought the place, they laid everybody off, so we're never going to do another passenger contract. And all my buddies got laid off. Laid off everybody downtown. They sold Kellogg and Company. It became Kellogg, Brown, and Root. That was Pullman Kellogg. I don't know what happened to Swindell. Travel Bill closed, and Pullman's and the rail car company closed. So what did they get out of the deal? They got the pension fund and what else?
Kevin writes in on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. PNG writing down Gillette's goodwill indicates that the brand value is lower because of lower cost online competition like the Dollar Shave Club, which you mentioned. They probably won't admit that the We Believe campaign has hurt the brand too.
Oh, I'm Kevin's right. Now, who decides it's, like I said earlier, who decides it's $8.5 billion versus 8 or 9 or 7 or 12. I mean, I don't know. It's a negotiation with the, but the point is it's a non-cash transaction. But now the book value of Procter & Gamble is $8.5 billion less. But the first thing you do when you look at somebody's, if you're actually one of these guys that looks at book value of a company, there's a bunch of stuff you need to know, which is hard to know. If the first thing you do is look at the goodwill line, to see if they've been buying other people for way more than market value or way more than book value, and were they good acquisitions. And how the hell you know that, I have no idea. And the other part is, you really got to be a worm, a bookworm, not in a bad sense, to know if they've got, you know, when Sears decided they're going to do their stuff, remember Matty on the show, you and I were talking about, where can I go to get the run that says, here's Sears 12,000 stores, and oh, by the way, the one in Oak Lawn, they bought in 1954 for $5 million, and it's depreciated down to $500,000, and the property's worth $90 billion today. I mean, how could you or I possibly, if we could get the information, go through and judge all those out and have some kind of clue what the company's worth? The answer is very difficult.
Yeah. It's a guess.
It's a guess.
It's an educated guess.
I mean, unless you're close enough to it to where you do know, or you should know more. S&P futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 82. Hopefully we'll stay up here and have an up and calm end of the week. We'll be back Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.